Hello, hello, everyone. I hope everyone's doing well out there. I wanted to make a quick announcement. We've got concurrent programming going on both on the main stage and the education room. At 12:15, we've got John Sullivan speaking from Integrated Compliance Solutions about cannabis banking, and that's in the education room. It's just right outside in the lobby. Let's go down the hallway, E101 and 102. Right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with our first panel discussion of the weekend. The topic for this discussion is Cannabis Legislative Roundup 2015. It's a retrospective covering hemp, medical, and recreational cannabis. And our panelists include Courtney Moran, who is with Earth Law. She is an industrial hemp attorney here in Portland. We've got Leland Berger, who is also a cannabis attorney here in Portland. We've got Representative Val Hoyle. She is from Eugene. She'll be speaking with us today. We've got Paul Looney, also a cannabis attorney here in Portland. And Pioneer Pete, who has been working extensively on the Measure 91 Rules Committee. So this is going to be an interesting topic. Please join us. Thank you.
No, it's great. Thank you.
If there's one theme that I hope emerges from this distinguished panel, it is wonkiness matters. We have a little bit of a be careful what you wish for situation here in Oregon, in that we won. And then government and bureaucracy has to happen. And after any revolution, those next stages are probably as important as all the fighting that went on, in this case, during Prohibition. And we have a panel of folks here who really are knowledgeable about this. Oregon is a second home for me, and I've been paying close attention to the legislative developments and have a lot of good friends who are immersed in it, and it was... Stop me if I'm wrong, guys. It was trench warfare out there for a while. And we're going to talk a little bit about this, but I just want to congratulate these folks and everybody that worked on the rules part, the implementation part of the drug peace victory in Oregon for doing such a great job and implementing the best, as Russ Belville put it in his words earlier, the best legalization in the world to date. Amy already introduced the whole panel. I'm going to start with Pioneer Pete. You were delving deep into this. Now that you've emerged into the sunlight and you're blinking, how do you feel about it? And what are the most important issues still to deal with on the legislative and implementation side for all forms of cannabis in Oregon?
I'm going to grab this. Good afternoon. Thanks for being here, guys. It's a great show. It's only great, though, because of everybody who's come here to join us. So what we're working on right now, you got loud
can you
enough?
Hear? Can you hear in the back?
Loud enough?
Can't hear.
So what we're working on right now at the legislative level are going to be some changes to House Bill 3400, especially going into the 2016 legislative session. It's a short session. We don't have a lot of time to make the headway we need to. We feel like the legislature understood most of our concerns as a business and industry in 2015, but in working to get things done before a deadline, sometimes things get lost in translation or just slip through the cracks. So we're going to be looking to make guarantees for patients in 2016 that they can continue to receive access to their medication regardless of what store they go to without being taxed. We'd like to see medical stores be able to continue to sell to adult use consumers past the end of 2016. We don't see any specific reason that those two systems cannot coexist. And we think that the adult use customers could be taxed at the medical stores and get a better selection, a different variety of products than they will at adult use only facilities. We're also looking specifically at the concerns that growers have. We understand that this industry is evolving and needs to be regulated in the eyes of the state. The flip side of that is we have to be very careful with the nature of the regulations that we impose, because we still have to be competitive with a currently unregulated market, And in order to do that, the regulated market needs its rules to be responsible and to keep costs down. From the OLCC end of things, we're also looking at issues like packaging, tamper evidence, child safety, and also the expense that goes along with it. We don't want to create a huge introduction of new material into the waste stream. At the same time, flowers are no longer going to be sold in sandwich bags. So we have to find a happy compromise there.
Great introduction there. Taking a quick step back, Courtney Moran, for folks who are coming new to the legislative side of, in Oregon, there is an interplay between adult social use, often called recreational, the existing medical program run by OLCC, and of course there's what today is called the hemp side of the plant.
Medical's run by Oregon Health Authority.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry. And the hemp side of the plant. So, for those who are coming new to the debate now, how did that all play out in the legislature? And are you getting the sense, or do you personally believe that it's a fair balance and that Oregonians are being well served who voted for Measure 91?
No.
Lee or Courtney?
We got fucked.
Really?
In the legislature. You bet. We wrote three times in Measure 91 to leave the Medical Act alone. Three times. People had misinformed the leadership on the M91 committee that there was all this abuse and that we needed to limit it and we needed to regulate it and there had to be limits on plants and all this kind of nonsense. What differentiated the last session from sessions before, I've been going to legislature since 1999, when we passed the medical in 98, and for years, the only voice that was there for us was the ACLU. And more recently, there have been, Jeff Sugarman, who was involved in the campaign in 98, in 2013 got involved again. But this session, there were like 50 lobbyists on our team, four or five of them that were really actively involved in salvaging, the best that they could. The thing I'm excited about next year is less about the short session, and long term, I think that what we need to be focusing on is what Measure 91 was about freeing the prisoners and about ending cannabis bigotry. We were able to get expungement on most offenses. We need to get expungement available for all offenses. We need to, anyway, that's the kind of stuff I'm working out, but that's not even what I'm excited about for next year. What I'm excited about for next year is that next year is an election year. And, there's only four statewide positions. But there's three that are important. The governor, when she was a state legislator, Kate Brown, was the only state legislator to come to our victory party on the Medical Marijuana Act. And the attorney general toured a dispensary before dispensaries were licensed, and was supportive of and supported by our community. And I'm excited that we have, at least potentially, a candidate for Secretary of State who not only is also a woman, which I'm excited about, but who is here today, Val Hoyle. So if you're not registered to vote, please register to vote. There can't be any changes made unless you're a registered voter. If you're not a registered voter, and you try and go lobby, nobody's going to listen to you. And you can't vote. If you're on probation or parole, and you think you can't vote because your probation or parole officer told you you can't, you have to ask yourself, is this the first time they lied to me? Because the only time you can't vote when you're on probation or post-prison supervision is if you're actually physically in custody. So register to vote and pay close attention to the race for Secretary of State, because when it's time, vote for Val.
Now, folks, Lee, Courtney, and Paul are all attorneys here in the state, so you guys can jump in on this as well. It's a follow-up question. As well, I want to get back to this issue of Oregon leading the way in things like cannabis-friendly social establishments and erasing the red districting of cannabis. But before we get there, I want to stick with the legislature. What everybody on all sides of all of this debate has been saying to me, mostly in a complaining kind of way about the legislative processes, there are these lobbyists now that are forcing certain bills or certain directions, certain energy that might not have otherwise spontaneously appeared. Who are the major forces behind pushing the cannabis legislation for better or for worse during this last session? Who were these lobbyists? Who were they? Paul?
For full disclosure, I'm an industrial hemp lobbyist. So I was promoting industrial hemp. It will save the earth. Or will help save the earth.
Well, let's transition into that next, into the hemp side. Paul, was there anything you wanted to say about that? Like, were there outside state forces? Was it inside? What was going on in the trenches?
No, this is, now that the money is above ground, people can invest it in lobbyists and politicians, and that's what we see happen. When you have a well-regulated industry, you need an army of lobbyists to make sure the regulations are on your side. So you had lobbyists saying, I want these regs because they help me and my clients, and other lobbyists said, I want these type of regs over here because they'll help my clients.
And what were the big issues? What were the real battles fought over? What were the tensions?
Well, I mean, the big tension, which Lee had mentioned earlier, was the dismantling of the Oregon medical marijuana program, which nobody in the state wanted other than, you know, maybe some law enforcement who were misguided and a few folks that thought that the medical program was somehow competition for their recreational business. So it was very misguided, and people who didn't understand the relationship that patients and growers have.
Walk me through, either of you guys, then how it looks. We already talked about, so OLCC running this recreational, right? Department of Agriculture in charge of hemp. How, in the end, you used a colorful expression, Lee, we got blanked. How did it emerge? Is medical severely damaged? What's the situation?
I think that, from my perspective, the other big area where there was a big fight had to do with the residency requirement. And as best I recall, I was the only one in the legislature that was lobbying that was opposed to it. I wrote a memo to each of the members of the committee. The lawyer I associate with in Southern Oregon, Robert Graham, wrote a letter to each of the committee members. We tried to get that stopped. Now that the OLCC has come up with rules for it, you know, suddenly the others are speaking out on that as well. I think what happened is that in 2013 we created a regulated supply system for the distribution of medical cannabis, and the fellow who was in charge of that began by changing the name from medical marijuana facility to medical marijuana dispensary. And then during the rules advisory committee meetings, was amazed that the only thing that's regulated in the medical side is the distribution, and that there had to be regulation necessarily of growers and processors as well. And I think that you combine that with some legislators and the chair of the Liquor Commission, who's also the district attorney for Klamath County, reading the Cole memo really narrowly, reading it to say that, unless we do these things, jackbooted federal thugs are going to shut us down and patients aren't going to get nothing. Specifically as to the chair of the OLCC, he was continually quoted as saying that 75% of medical cannabis left the state. And I asked him one day, where's that number come from? What's the scientific basis for that? And he said that he had talked to some growers in Southern Oregon, and that's what they told him. And I'm, really? Then why do you repeat it as if it were fact? So I think that there were some good-hearted legislators who were talked into some positions that they are now regretting. I know that, for example, Ginny Burdick, the Senate co-chair of the 91 committee, is on record saying that she thinks they got the residency requirement wrong, and if we had to do over, they wouldn't do it that way. So
it's nice to see development and growth, and I just want to take a moment here because a lot of people that I care about a lot were hurt during this debate. It was a slog, and yet it's a patting on the back of you all and you all here and everybody here today that it really still, I report from around the world, and so of necessity, I'm from a higher angle. You can see, like, as I get closer and closer to the surface, I have so much to learn about the specifics. But when you look at a high elevation and what people know about Oregon, it is miles ahead of anything that came before.
I think that, and I've said publicly, that Oregon has, particularly in criminal law, marijuana law reform, the most criminal law, marijuana reform anywhere so far. I'm hopeful for California is going to take it further, but so far, and that's a testament really to Senator Floyd Prozanski, to Representative Ann Leininger, who brokered between Floyd and Andy Olson, Representative Andy Olson, who's a former state trooper. So by getting those two guys to agree, we were able to get the most criminal law, marijuana law reform ever anywhere so far.
Before shifting to hemp here for a minute, I want to ask a quick question about that. Given that Oregon is paving the way in so many areas, the stigma issue, I agree. Personally, there's a few things for me when the drug war is over: federal prohibition, home cultivation everywhere, and the reduction of the red light district. Because I personally, as a responsible adult and parent, choose not to engage in alcohol or other drug use, but I enjoy the cannabis plant. I don't want to be a criminal if I care to have a night out. Any moves legislatively? I've heard Floyd Prozanski say it's on the horizon someday, but any concrete efforts on the horizon for cannabis-friendly social establishments and other ways of integrating it any place where alcohol would be legit?
That's, an interesting issue. It kind of encompasses a lot of what we were talking about earlier. We have folks who are regulating this industry that until a year ago had zero knowledge of this industry, and the first persons they talked to were law enforcement. And so they've had a jaded mindset to begin with. And the sooner we could get somebody from the cannabis industry on the OLCC, the better off we'll be. We'll be able to get real changes.
Does everybody, we're kind of getting wonky, which is the point of this panel. Everybody know what the OLCC is? Is there anybody who does not know what the OLCC is? Show of hands. Okay, and then the agency that is in charge of...
They're in charge of the recreational marijuana program. And, there's five of them appointed, one per congressional district, one that's represents the alcohol industry, but there's nobody from the cannabis industry. They have a district attorney as the chair. So we have nobody really there who's in the inside that can actually get something done. That's why people have to pay the lobbyist. And that's a huge problem. And then getting back to, I don't like to call it a red light district. I mean, that just gives it a bad connotation. A social club. In my neighborhood, people walk to a neighborhood pub. They can sit outdoors with children. The adults can enjoy adult beverage. Children can enjoy water or soft drinks. You can all have some nice food. What's to say that we can't have cannabis like that? It's just, that's where it needs to be.
That is where it needs to be.
And so we just need to, and part of it is, as I tell everybody, this industry, we have to prove ourselves. And we're doing that now. We're proving ourselves. We've had a full week now of recreational marijuana, and the world hasn't come to an end, the sales. So I think it's happening out there. People want this, and people are creating social clubs. And so they're going to exist. And so it's whether they want to have regulated social clubs or unregulated, just like we had to unregulate dispensaries until they decided to finally regulate them.
Well, my vote here with the influencers in the state is show the rest of the world how it works when it's above ground and regulated, just like something like alcohol. Courtney, on the hemp side of the plant, one of the themes of this entire convention, one of the reasons why Jerry Norton organizes this convention is because of the love for the entire plant and the unity and the symmetry and the vertical integration, the way that the plant, other various sides of the plants can assist one another. Another kind of strange thing, in a way it's a victory, but that the psychoactive cannabis side of the argument was so loud in Oregon that there was tension between types of the cannabis plant. Again, from being in the field all over the world, I'm not the only one to think this, I believe in 5 years we're not going to be talking about THC levels as defining the name of the type of the plant. There are going to be people selling psychoactive cannabis under recreational statutes called chill buzz when you don't want to get too high, 3% THC. And then there are going to be people growing hemp for fantastic, let's say, oil qualities, but that plant is going to require 6% THC. And we're not going to be so obsessed about it. That said, there was a slog this year, Courtney. Can you walk us through it and tell us what we've learned in the first year of trying to really implement hemp permits in Oregon?
Sure. The issue in the spring was with cross-pollination, and there was a bill going through the legislature that was defeated in the Senate. And as I mentioned earlier today, we had 9 farmers with seeds in the ground this year. We are harvesting all forms of cannabis this month, and there have been no reported issues with cross-pollination. So cannabis can and will coexist with cannabis.
And I'll have a follow-up, but just to punctuate that point, those 9 farmers were more than Kentucky's famous year last year, where their Senator McConnell went to bat and slogged it out with the DEA and has a permitting process now in its second year. I am a permit holder with a project that I had been helping in Kentucky. I have a DEA permit. The DEA is no longer a problem for hemp, and the DEA wouldn't be a problem for hemp here either if we could get our state agencies to cooperate and help farmers import seeds, which did not happen, and still 9 farmers got seed in the ground. I want to also say, as somebody who cares a lot, as I know everybody here does, about all sides of the plant, nobody wanted any damage to psychoactive plants, and I hope the fact that there was no damage to psychoactive plants for hemp will ease the tension. Do you think that the dialogue is improving, Courtney?
Absolutely. I think this panel is a reflection of that. We're all here working toward legalization of the genus cannabis, not for one particular use. Regulating based on psychoactivity or cannabinoid profiles is an easy way to provide for all uses of the cannabis plant rather than just compartmentalizing one specific use, but can provide for all uses that this plant, you know, has gratefully given us.
Val, what's the takeaway for you from the session, and where do we go from here?
So the takeaway, and I'll apologize, I have a cold, so normally I have a really good outdoor voice, but not today. I have to say that coming into session, after the passage of Measure 91, we had people on, you know, from across the political spectrum and a lot of legislators that needed education. And right after the ballot measure passed, what we have to recognize is that there needs to be a complete cultural shift until we can actually address these issues sort of openly. So we had, you know, people who had been growing marijuana illegally. We had hemp farmers. We had, you know, Republicans and some of our other legislators that were absolutely opposed to any kind of legalization of marijuana throughout the ballot measure campaign, you know, still in that kind of reefer madness sort of mentality. We had legislators who had been championing for decades, you know, over a decade, the, you know, ending prohibition. We had a lot of different people and the need for education. And what I can say is that the advocates came in, were incredibly professional, and most of all, incredibly patient. Patient with people, with a group where this was a new thing for us. We had to start something up. And what we ended up with wasn't perfect, and not everything is going to work. But what I can say is, now I am here on behalf of Representative Ann Leininger. She is phenomenal, just a phenomenal leader, and was chair of the Marijuana Committee on the House side. We also had Peter Buckley from Southern Oregon and Representative Ken Helm, who is a land use attorney. And I couldn't be more proud to be part of that team. But again, she wasn't able to make it here today. But what I can say is that as advocates, whether it was from the, you know, hemp or marijuana side, or the medical people talking about the need to make sure we maintain medical marijuana for patients who need it, you are professional and patient. So we are going to have to change things. And as we look at what our legislative agenda is going to be in 2016, we need to hear from you. And we need that same kind of patience. And we need to understand that it isn't going to happen overnight. When we look at the wine industry and the great agritourism that we have in the wine industry, that started slowly. We had to change our tax laws, you know, to encourage wineries. We changed our land use laws to allow wineries to be able to serve food and have people come, but that took time. So I think we have to be patient, but I am really, really, really excited to be part of a state where we're doing these things. My aunt, a few years ago, did a video called Lawbreaking Granny. She had liver cancer and lived in New Jersey and needed to get, marijuana so that she could stop being sick, so she could put on weight, so she could have surgery. But she lives in a state where the governor feels that medical marijuana should be criminalized. So she did a video. I mean, you know, my cousin was able to get her some oils so that she could put on weight, and she lived another 2.5 years. So she did this video called Lawbreaking Granny. She said, I am over 70. I am breaking the law to get medicine that is gonna allow me to live. And I'm proud that in this state, we won't do that. So as we move forward, it is essential that we protect patients' ability to get the medicine they need, that we work with small farmers who can grow strains of marijuana that will allow people to get, you know, who knows what kind of cures we can have, to make sure that we have a recreational marijuana supply that when legalization happens, prohibition is ended throughout the country, that we become the Napa Valley of the United States, and that we will be able to make money, we will be able to improve rural economies, and again, ensure that people get to enjoy product that we grow right here in Oregon. Now, in terms of hemp, in 2009, I was Senator Floyd Prezansky's policy analyst when we passed the law that allowed for Oregonians to grow hemp. And I'll tell you, the best committee hearing I have ever been in was that one, because we had the Speaker of the House from North Dakota call and tell us why. It was important. 30 miles away, he had Canadian farmers growing hemp, making money. We had a company in Portland that was importing hemp seed from Canada, driving past Oregon farmers. I had farmers in my district who said, I would like to grow this, but we're not treating it like a crop, which is what we need to do. So he called in to testify, and he said, seriously, I was dying. I had tears coming out of my eyes. He said, look, I'm no hippie. I'm a Republican farmer from North Dakota, and I want to grow a product that will help me make money for my family, and I think that we need to do this, so you should vote for this law. And the whole room broke up, but it was true. You know, we need to talk about cannabis as coexistence of different agricultural products. But again, we're coming at it from a different place where it hasn't been legal. Now, I also want to say that we had cooperation between Republicans and Democrats. We have, like, again, on the House side, Andy Olson, former state trooper. We have Representative Carl Wilson, who comes from Josephine County and has people on all sides of the issue. But the fact of the matter is, we worked together. We got 5 bills that were unanimous out of committee, and it wasn't easy. And a lot of the thanks go to you right here and the advocates. And I asked you to be patient, because this is a cultural shift. But I believe we can get there, and I believe we're the best state to do it.
Pioneer Pete, can we start and go down the line? Everybody, one wish, number one wish, if you could blink the legislature and the governor to sign one thing in the upcoming session, what would be the one fixed change improvement that you would want to see without fail in the next session?
I can't miss on this one. We've only been under the current state of completely unregulated distribution of cannabis since the early 1970s. Richard Nixon's administration, when they were creating what is now our federal drug schedule under the Controlled Substances Act, put cannabis and a number of other substances into Schedule I, gave the Congress 2 years to study this and then come back with recommendations. The Congress at that point and the commission that was appointed by President Nixon not only said that cannabis does not belong in Schedule I, it doesn't belong in the drug schedule at all. It belongs under the control of what we now know as the American Botanicals Council. So if I had one wish, put it back where it belongs, under the control of the American Botanicals Council, like every other herb.
Do I get a wish too?
Yeah, everybody down the line. I just want to say, I hope everybody, and if you folks are listening in the booths right now, any of you guys have a red phone to God? We're asking for some things here. Okay, Val.
So I want to be clear. I just have one vote. But at the state level, I feel like we're moving in the right direction, and again, in a bipartisan manner. But if I had one wish, it would be for the federal government to ensure that people who are doing business in the cannabis industry could have access to banking so that we could have a free market economy and sell this product and also have a safe way to deposit money so that it can and tax this product so that we can pay for schools and mental health and, again, improve the economies in rural Oregon.
And I think there's going to be a discussion about that, about the banking and the financial sides over the course of the weekend. I'm not sure when. Lee? Oh, it's right now?
The we mentioned a lot of legislators, and we didn't mention my representative, Lou Frederick, who had put forward the bill to make it so you could expunge all marijuana offenses. And so I guess on the state legislative level, I hope for, you know, the finishing of that, the putting the safety card exception back in the Medical Act that got deleted.
Can you clarify on what that's about?
Yeah, that when you apply, you're protected unless until it's denied. That was deleted from 3400 after we were repeatedly told there were no changes to 475309. And nationally, if we're talking about descheduling, and we should be, because it's a non-toxic herbal remedy, and if we're talking about banking, then we also have to talk about changing 280E. And if I can leave everybody with just one thought, I mean, if you're involved in the cannabis industry and you want to be lobbying on these issues nationally, the only group that's doing that is the National Cannabis Industry Association. They want $100 a month. They're the only folks doing it that are lobbying on the three issues that we've just spoken about. So in addition to registering to vote and remembering to vote for Val next fall, get involved with the NCIA. Thanks very much.
280E, everybody knows, is the IRS code that is magically not allowing cannabis businesses to make the same business deductions as any other business. That's, by the way, the expunging discussion in Oregon has been national news. People are really talking about it. Corey?
I would echo what all the panelists have been saying so far. We need full removal of all cannabis, the full cannabis genus from the Controlled Substances Act to allow states to be able to regulate the way that they see fit. I encourage states to regulate based on cannabinoid profiles so that we have a true understanding and our regulations are reflecting scientific understanding of this plant and provides for all uses, and we stop compartmentalizing industrial, medical, recreational, but we look at the true value and the symbiotic relationship of the cannabinoids and regulate that way.
Paul?
My wish would be that the state legislature would actually, I apologize Val in advance, but actually would do their job and legislate for the entire state. And we set this horrible precedent where part of the state can opt out of the law of the people. I mean, that's a bad precedent. It's going to come back to haunt us in the future. I have no doubt about it. And so that's really scary. We shouldn't allow certain parts of the state to say, we don't want that. Then why are they in Oregon? Why are they getting any tax dollars from Oregon? It really bothers me when certain people can say, I don't like certain Oregon state laws.
Why do they hate democracy?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Why do they hate democracy? You know, sometimes they win, sometimes you lose. I agree with that. You know, I lost legalization many times. You know, I didn't get upset. I worked harder.
You didn't succeed. And thank you, by the way, for continuing to work harder. Do I get a vote as well? My wish list in Oregon. My wish for Oregon, in addition to what you've all said, I have the luxury of saying what they said, would be the state completely rebuilding its hemp legislation in a way very similar to the very simple way that Kentucky has implemented their hemp program that will allow private farmers under the current federal law to import as much seed as they need for large-scale acreage, because the number one application for Oregon, I think, that is going to make Oregon energy independent is hemp biomass, and for that, even for the research stage, you need large acreage. And it's a very simple process. The feds have no problem with it. The Oregon delegation has said that they're in place for making sure that federal agencies like the DEA will help facilitate hemp farmers importing. For that, though, the legislature, hemp legislation has to be radically improved, as Courtney knows, and we also have to have a sort of a miracle with the state ag department and institutions of higher learning crafting an MOU with hemp farmers in the state. And last thing I'll say about this, as believe me when I tell you, as interested in psychoactive cannabis as I am in hemp, is nothing but love and harmony between all the varieties. We do not need geographic balkanization. We just need good communication amongst farmers.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's shall we go down the line? What haven't we covered, Paul? Is there something else legislatively that the folks need to know? Or anyone?
Well, I just think the legislature has to make sure that the OLCC and the rules making process doesn't actually change what the legislature passed. In my opinion, just going through the draft rules so far, they are legislating. They're going beyond their authority, and we need to make sure that doesn't happen.
I will just respectfully disagree with Doug. I think Oregon is a unique state, and we do not want to be copying what Kentucky does. What's unique in Kentucky is that their Commissioner of Agriculture, James Comer, is leading the charge there and getting great cooperation on the federal level. What we need in Oregon is a director of our Department of Agriculture that will also lead the charge and actually support our farmers. There are members in our Department of Agriculture that are working the best that they can with the authority that they're given, but we need someone to actually be championing and supporting our farmers, not only on the state level, but into our federal representation as well. And, you know, Oregon is a cannabis state. We don't need to only focus on one particular use. That's what this conference is all about. Coexistence is all coming together to celebrate the genus cannabis. And we can and we will work with our legislature this session to implement more solid regulations for all uses, including industrial hemp, and better regulations for our farmers so that the 2016 production season is more effective, and hopefully we will be able to import seeds through legal DEA channels this next year.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for legislation that harmonizes the differences between the medical and adult use high THC cultivators and the hemp cultivators. I'm also, I respectfully disagree a little bit with Paul. I'd like to see the legislature look to what the OLCC promulgates in the adult use rules as a to be able to correct things that they passed last session that, as it played out, weren't such good ideas. And I think, frankly, that the OLCC is looking to the legislature for that as well, and that we can expect, although there are these temporary rules that are going to go into effect in a couple of weeks and be in effect for 6 months, that they certainly could be amended, especially if the legislature takes some corrective action. So I'm looking for a correction sort of session.
You know, I'm glad to hear this. For a panel that started off with a very colorful and powerful, we got F-worded, it sounds like you're talking more tweaks than complete rebuilding.
Yeah, well, the stuff with the medical is kind of a long story for another panel. But in terms of the adult use, I think that there are tweaks that can fix some of the problems that were caused by legislation that was, you know, hastily enacted in an omnibus bill that had to have, you know, unanimity from the committee and the rest of it. Certainly, one thing I agree with Paul on, and a lot of my practice is devoted to the opt-out stuff. I mean, getting rid of that would be tremendous. I don't think it's realistic, but that's likely to happen, but I sure am hopeful for it.
I bet it will one day, especially once the dollar, because in Colorado, you're seeing the original knee-jerk county, some of them are pulling back already.
No, I think over time it will, but not in February.
Right, not this February.
So, defending the legislature and the legislative process, it's like building a fence, and you put up one post, and then the next session you put up another post, and if we slowly work together and put up enough posts, we will build that fence working together, but it is a slow process. So again, what I would say is having patience and being willing to talk about, again, every single area, whether it's us as legislators or as society, there needs to be a cultural shift. But I think there's great opportunity. There's great opportunity for, you know, economic benefit in our rural areas and in our urban areas. But one of the things, and to sort of build off of the last speaker's discussion, this is an industry that does not have a gender disparity in ownership or opportunity or people that work in this industry. So I come from the outdoor industry. I work in politics. And there is a gender disparity in benefit and in power. And the fact is, in this industry, you don't have that. And I think that that brings a different style of leadership, a different style of opportunity. And I'm really excited to see what's going to happen. And other than that, I say be patient. Let's communicate and understand that we're all going to have to get out of our comfort zone to move forward. But if we're working in the same direction and we have a plan and we can be honest and open, I believe that we'll be able to get go a long way.
Just want to say the product is largely female as well, not necessarily on the hemp side. Pioneer Pete?
Great, but there you go.
I am a huge advocate for matriarchy. I can't wait for the overall bigger matriarchy. Go ahead.
Major agreement with what Val was just saying about this being an industry which is extremely gender neutral. In Oregon, the latest statistic I saw was that about 45% of the businesses are either owned by or the primary decisions are made by women. We are the most equitable, most fair business on the face of the earth. And we have a lot to teach other businesses with that model of equity. Moving forward, I'd like to bring up a couple of things that Val mentioned into a finer point. There's a reason we have a legislative process and a bureaucratic process. The legislative process moves very slowly. If we make a mistake there, it can take a very long time to correct. The bureaucratic process is much more rapid, sometimes to its own detriment. But if we make a mistake at the OLCC level, we're inside of one of the other administrations that's governing the various aspects of our plant, it's much easier to fix and it's much quicker to fix. So there's a constant tension between the bureaucrats that are put there by the legislators and the legislators that are put there by us and us ourselves, the people that they're all supposed to be representing. In this process, there have been mistakes made, and there will be more. And in fact, I would encourage everybody to go to my favorite website, marijuana.oregon.gov, and comment on the new proposed OLCC rules. You can do the same thing at the OHA's website for the medical marijuana program. The comment period for the medical marijuana program ends the 16th. For the OLCC at marijuana.oregon.gov, smile when you say it, that process ends the 22nd. So there's still plenty of time to put your input in. And honestly, a democracy doesn't work unless we participate in it. So go out there and participate. Take the information you learn here this weekend and put it to work on Monday.
And speaking of participation, we have time to take a few questions. If I could, really quick, I just want to clarify one thing on that, on the hemp side of the thing. This is evolving, as you can tell. Even we've been scheduling potentially people that are interested in the hemp regs to try to have a meeting while we're all up in one place here this weekend. And so you're actually hearing, when we talk about this, real discussions that we're, those of us that care about Oregon are really having. And to clarify, you know, when I was saying Kentucky-style legislation, what I meant is that the feds now, and Kentucky had to fight for it, have a process by which they are, without any question, it's working in Tennessee, it's working in a lot of states, they're issuing permits, and what that requires is an MOU between a state agency, either the Ag Department or Institution of Higher Education, and the individual farmers, if they are to be able to import seed with the federal stamp of approval, which is something that happens to be important to me. So the only reason I mention Kentucky is that their regulations are extremely, their application process is extremely simple, and they have that MOU that allows farmers to get, private farmers to get seed up to 50,000 pounds per acre. And I just want to ask Courtney, if hearing that that's just what I mean when I say Kentucky, do you, because I agree with you, Oregon's going to do it its own way, but are you seeing that has to be in there, or are you saying like a different way of approaching it in order to get the dang seed in for the farmers?
To legally import seed, we have to go through DEA and the permitting process. Our Department of Agriculture was not able to help our farmers, so it would be wonderful if they would get on board, or a university would get on board with partnering with our farmers and actually helping them import seed so we can have true variety trials here. I just think that Kentucky's law is only focused on research, and Oregon's law is not only focused on research, and we don't want to limit what our farmers can do.
Agree totally. And of course, you know, Colorado has both. We could potentially have both, and it has to be research to be in sync with federal law, right?
Everything we're doing right now is research. You were out in the fields. You saw. This is the first year. We, you know, we got seeds the way that we could, and we planted what we could. Farmers are trying to see what varieties are going to work here, what type of irrigation we have to use, what type of fertilizers we have to use, planting times, that kind of thing. So everything we are doing is research. We just don't want to limit what we can be doing in the future.
And keep in mind, as you know well, Kentucky allows sales and marketing research, so their farmers are selling their product under legitimate research. Right? Questions?
I heard you guys mention that people hate democracy, and I was reading a little bit about that last week. I guess my question is, in regards to these counties or these cities that are opting out of allowing cannabis to be distributed for recreational purposes, are they still receiving tax money from the program equally to all the cities that are allowing it?
Well,
or with the opt-out, do they lose the ability to take...
What we wrote into 91 is that once the OLCC issues retail licenses, where we'll have the only sales tax in Oregon is on cannabis products at adult retail facilities at 17%, and a municipality can add 3% to that, and they get a portion of the 17 or the 20%, whatever it is, under the law. They expressly don't get a portion of the 17% if they ban those establishments, if they opt out of licensing those. There's two other aspects of this that's come up in my practice. One is that there's an exception to the ban if you are licensed as a medical marijuana dispensary, and if you've gone through a land use application process, then even though there's a ban, they have to let you open. In Ontario, in Malheur County, they're not, and we filed suit about that there. And then there's no tax on medicine anywhere in Oregon, and no medicine except for marijuana in Lapine. And there had been in White City, and or not White City, in Gold Hill. Is Gold Hill the north end? Yeah, Gold Hill in Jackson County and in North Bend. North Bend and Gold Hill repealed theirs. And I wrote a letter to the city attorney for the city of Lapine last week, and we'll see whether they're going to repeal theirs as well. But, I agree with the notion, and certainly Senator Farioli, who is responsible for the opt-out, but also for early sales. So, you know, it's a funny thing. I think that over time, places that have opted out are going to opt back in.
I think, you know, nothing that comes out of a collaborative process is going to be a true collaborative process where you have very, very different ideas of what should happen around the table is going to be acceptable or ideal for everyone. But we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. This would not have been my choice. However, it was a way to get this done. And if we think about this as moving forward and in ending prohibition, if we look at when the last prohibition ended, it's going to take a while for that cultural shift to happen, for cannabis to be normalized. And I believe we need to be patient and allow that to happen. And I believe if we do that, as opposed to coming out right out of the gate with a non-bipartisan bill and forcing the issue, if we'd have done that, I don't think that we would be in as good a position to be able to sit down with those farmers and talk about the economic benefit of whatever kind of cannabis plant they wanted to grow. So it is, again, it's not ideal, but it is part of the process, and I believe puts us in a good position moving forward.
Probably ask the slave owners when you make space for population.
And the way that we can do this is education. We're all here together, coming together to talk about cannabis, and a lot of us are already involved in this industry, but it takes us to get out there and talk to the public every single day and educate them on exactly what you know. Talk to people in the grocery store, talk to people at the gas station, no matter where you are, talk to them about cannabis. I was at Whole Foods the other day, and I saw a guy buying some hemp protein, so I sat and probably had a 15-minute conversation with him after. Just excited to see someone else buying hemp products and knowing that they're aware of the great benefits that cannabis can provide him through his dietary needs. So just get out there and talk about it. Maybe something that you know is something that they don't know, or maybe they can actually teach you too. So it really takes communicating about this plant. We can't be so afraid of the words marijuana and hemp and cannabis anymore. It's not a scary plant. There it is right there. How scary is that? It's not. Let's talk about it. Let's get it out in the open.
Paul Loney, Courtney Moran, Lee Berger, Val Hoyle, Pioneer Pete, thanks for a great panel. Hope everybody's having a good time out there.
These are the breaks. Breaks on the bus, breaks on the car, breaks to make you a superstar, breaks to win and breaks to lose. But these here breaks will rock your shoes, and these are the breaks. Break it up, break it up, break it up.
Two like placards that shows who's speaking and